There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
My time. Welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Hey, I'm Sean, and reading through a lot of texts here and doing some research during the break and reaching out to folks in Saraland. Let me tell you the latest of what we have. Now, this all came from that tornado warning that the National Weather Service issued last hour. And it, looking at the reports coming in, and we had a little bit of a, you could see a Facebook Live we had going on our page. You can go to facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. See the video from the Plantation Motel there in Saraland. So Plantation Motel, north of where 158 comes in. So where, you know, Industrial comes in and hits 43, that Plantation Motel on the east side of 43. Then I got information here from the text line, like Jay said, China Doll rice and beans have been damaged. So that's south of there, right? So I think it is. And Grant said, yeah, he's talking about the Union Carbide facility next to China Doll and Chickasaw. Yeah, I know where that Union Carbide facility is too, but I don't think there was any damage there, Grant. I hope not. Obviously, the chemicals in there. But they said, yeah, damage to China Doll. So this tornado must have been tracking almost, if you look at it on a map, from south to north without much of an angle in it. You know, often you'll see those tornadoes riding the angle of a front line or something coming in. But this, if you lined it up from Chickasaw up to where Plantation Motel is in Saraland, looks like a straight south to north track. And then we're hearing other reports, too, coming in of damage nearby. Yeah, according to update here from Lisa on the text line said, fire department saying multiple structural damage from Saraland to Criolla, so on up into Criolla, tracking further north. We're getting the information as it comes in. If you're there, listen to us in Saraland, and you know, have something to report, let us know on the text line at 343-0106. Dr. Bill Williams said, be part of today as we have, number one, the training effect from these thunderstorms, which is causing the flooding issues out there. The same areas getting rain, you know, hour after hour after hour, in addition to these tornadoes being in these feeder bands. And there's one right here. The strength, I don't know. I can see the roof off at the Plantation Motel in some of the video we've gotten, but that doesn't, not sure exactly what the strength of this tornado was. We will, I'm sure tomorrow they'll start giving it, you know, the numbers as they kind of forensically put that back together. But right now, take heed of these warnings. Like I said last hour, when we said, hey, this was a confirmed tornado on the ground. And this was, you know, this was happening. So you need to take, and hopefully people did take shelter there. And now tornado warning in effect as well till about 1:15 for Baldwin County. So that track taking it from northeast Mobile County to northwest Baldwin County. Keeping your eyes on this as well. So be listening for updates coming from the Emergency Alert System and National Weather Service and us right here. Now they said tornado warning, including Jackson, Watley, and Carlton, Alabama. Now that's down in between the forks of the rivers. Carlton, South Clark County. Of course, you know where Jackson is, across the bridge there, and Watley. So that area, I don't know if this is the same tornado path or this is a new one. We have not had that passed on to us yet, but we are watching that as well. Get information passed along to us. And talking about it last hour on how, you know, listen, we have nothing compared to what those folks in Louisiana have dealt with Ida and even our friends on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, but, you know, central Louisiana and that area down at Port Fouchon and up, you know, you go to Morgan City, go to Houma, La Rose, Cutoff, all those areas in there. Just dramatic pictures, just the first few coming in here, the damage there. But we did have some issues here. We've been talking about them, and they're mostly in the south part of Mobile County. And District 105 Representative Chip Brown is joining us now. That is his territory. It's where he lives. And here to give us an update on that and a whole lot more. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thanks, Sean. It's sad to hear about that hurricane up in Saraland. Hopefully, no casualties and everyone's
right.
Okay.
That's what we're praying for, too. Yeah, we're looking at the pictures. I mean, we're getting just a, you know how it is early in something, you're getting a picture here and a picture there, and I'm kind of trying to put it together in my mind of you know, I can see individual shots of a place, but I don't know how widespread the damage is at this point.
Yeah, we had a tornado that registered in Bolivar yesterday, and it didn't actually touch the ground. You know, we've got a little flooding on the rivers right now, and several roads that are impassable, like Dog River Bridge down in that area. And, you know, Bottle Battery, I talked with the mayor this morning, Mayor Barnes down there, and we've got some roads that have water over them, especially down around like Shell Belt in that area. But right now they're still passable. Spoke with Mayor Collier today down on Dolphin Island. And, you know, the West End has flooding, always has flooding, and they've got a fair amount of damage as far as, you know, stuff on the roadways and sand, debris, that sort of thing. Got some power poles down, but, you know, we're very fortunate. I mean, it's a lot of misery going on to the west of us. I spoke with some friends of mine that live in areas in right outside of New Orleans, in Mandeville and Metairie and Harahan, that's right outside of New Orleans, and they're in bad shape, really bad shape. I mean, I spoke with one friend this morning that I said, how is it? And he said, well, I'll be lucky if I can salvage a few clothes.
Wow.
The house was flooded, and the city there and Harahan, they don't have any portable drinking water. The police station was destroyed, and so they're the nursing homes are there, they have no water. It's a bad situation, terrible situation.
Hey, it's a brutal storm for wind speed wise, and as well as that surge and rain. You know, looking at it's kind of a mixed bag. I know we'll talk more about it in the weeks to come. Just early on, I saw some things that worked, and a lot of things, like you said, that didn't work. Levee system seems to have held, even the Great Wall of St. Bernard, that big concrete wall down there in the parish, and it seems to have held up, which is good news. But then again, there's a mess because people drove boats and campers and all that stuff up on the levee to protect it from the water, and then the wind got hold of that. And it looks like in New Orleans, right now, we haven't seen any levee flooding, any levee topping. So, that's good news, I guess. But, yeah, there's so many other problems those people are dealing with. And I'm glad you got phone calls through because I've been talking about this, too. So I've been texting two friends of mine on the North Shore over there, and they haven't gotten back with me. And I know a lot of people are going through that. Talking to Congressman Carl, too, about it, he said that AT&T was down over there. And so kind of telling people probably not to panic. I mean, I think my buddies are okay. I just don't think the texts are getting through or back out.
Yeah, and these were texts. They weren't. I wasn't able to speak with them. And one of my friends even said that. Said, you know, that he can't get voice calls out, but he can get texts. And for some reason, AT&T is not working down there, and Verizon is. Both of them have Verizon, so I'm not plugging Verizon, but I don't know if the AT&T tower had a hit on it. And you saw that big main power
that energy
going into New Orleans, toppled and fell into the river. So it's going to be some scary days ahead. Really will be reminiscent of Katrina, no power and that sort of thing. So, but it's good news that the levees are holding. I know some of those outlying areas they had some levee breaks in those areas. I was looking at John Lafitte, Louisiana.
Yeah.
Like 2 feet above sea level. They had a levee break and had flooding there. And so, scary situation. You know, just been a few miles more to the east, we would have been in some serious trouble here.
Yeah.
So we dodged a bullet.
That's for sure.
Our blessing is their curse, you know. So we just keep those people in Louisiana in our prayers.
And do what we do. We did it after Katrina. We've done it after Laura last year as a community. Not that we're the only ones, but this is my home. We organize quite well, and we'll be talking about that in the days to come, how to help out those folks. We know a little something about recovering after hurricanes and the stuff that they need, you know, the things that we have here we can send to the West. I know that we'll, as a community, do it again. We've done it in the past. We'll do it again to help out those folks because they do the same for us.
That's right. That's the Southern spirit. We all come together.
Absolutely. All right. So, yeah, and yeah, maybe reaching out to you later in the week as we try to get a better assessment of, you know, what 105 and Southwest Alabama is, you know, what kind of cleanup we got to do around here. I do want to talk with you at length this hour of the situation in Afghanistan. You told folks, you and I communicate over the weekend. We communicate, you know, off air about this. I'm beyond angry. I don't even know. I mean, like, angry and sad at the same time. And then I look at the fact that tomorrow is, the, I guess, 9 hours ahead there. I mean, it's getting ready to happen that we're out, right? With all the loss of lives that have happened here at the end of this, and let alone all the other people that are left on, we're leaving, right? Even though there are however many, even the administration admits hundreds, right, left in Afghanistan, we're leaving.
Well, yeah, and you know, they'll say hundreds, but it's in the thousands.
Right. I mean, but even they're admitting there's hundreds that are saying, "Eh, well." I mean, I don't get it.
Well, you saw, you know, I saw this last week that they started the Pentagon, and then also, you know, the White House themselves, Jen Psaki, started with the narrative that you know, they made efforts, but anyone that's there after they leave, that they chose to stay. And that's a complete lie. That's 100% of a lie. I mean, you know, I know people that still have family that are trapped there. I mean, and they can't. The problem is, I was looking this morning. There's an article about the students and faculty at the American University in Kabul that are trapped. They can't. And the problem, where we, it blows my mind, Sean, of what we have done is that we negotiated with the Taliban for the Taliban to do the security outside the airport, and we gave them lists by the administration and by CENTCOM's own admission. We gave them a list of people that needed to come through the checkpoints. Well, okay, the Taliban's not letting these people through. They're not going to let them through. I mean, and they're telling women that do not step foot outside the house or you'll be punished. So we've set up a scenario that was doomed to fail in the first place. I mean, there's just no way that they could have been serious about getting these people out. If we're the only country, Sean, the only country. I mean, Great Britain, France, Spain, Italy, even the Irish, the Dutch, all of them. When they went to get their people, they actually went over there and got their people. They ran missions inside of Kabul to you know, extradite their people, to pull them out, to extract them. And we didn't do that. We were setting up a situation of what happened last week by not providing perimeter security for the airport. And it's just amazing that it took that long for it to happen, to be honest with you. I mean, we are dooming thousands of Americans over there. And we're setting up a situation where it's just going to be a Danny Pearl, Nick Berg situation of hostages on TV. I mean, it's scary what we're doing. I mean, it's unbelievable, really, that an American president could do this to his own people.
Yeah, it just joining us, talking to Representative District 105, Chip Brown, but a man who spent quite a time in Afghanistan. And in our conversations of the airport of Kabul, you're a man that has been there. You know the gates, you know the scenario, and you were calling, you know, for some kind of security way ahead. And then we had the tragedy killing our armed forces members. When we come back, I want to talk about this in the micro to the macro, and the micro being a conversation I had with the congressman who said, I mean, he said there's six people he's been in contact with that want to get out right now, and the airport's closed and they can't get through, to the bigger conversation of what do we do going forward, There's discussion about going back in. I want to hear your opinion on all that and a whole lot more when we come back. Our guest, Chip Brown, right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. We've got a couple minutes here before the news, and we will continue our conversation with District 105 Representative Chip Brown, and a man that spent quite a amount of time in Afghanistan, has been nice enough over the weeks here to help put things in perspective for me and hopefully for y'all. And in a story somebody asked me about that we had mentioned last hour, there is a, got published on Fox News, the Taliban offered Kabul to the U.S., but the Americans said no. It says Taliban fighters took the Afghan capital city of Kabul faster than anyone anticipated earlier this month. But according to Washington Post report, the U.S. had an opportunity to hold the city only to willingly turn it over. When Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani fled the country and the city began to collapse as gangs were reported to be taken over, this led the U.S. military leaders meeting and reaching an agreement with the Taliban. And that's just a little bit of that story. I'll tweet it out. Chip, have you heard that one? The fact that, I mean, there it was. We had the chance to run Kabul and we said no.
Yeah, that sounds par for the course, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, John, we had Bagram Air Base to the north, which was a massive air base. We had, you know, Kandahar, which was the old civilian airport in Kandahar, and that was a huge operating base. We had Jalalabad. We had, you know, because what we've done, we've set up a situation where, you know, we all focus on Kabul, but there's American citizens and our allies that helped us that are trapped really in all of these places. And if we just would have kept Bagram open, even, we could have provided a secure passage from Kabul to Bagram, and that would have given us an opening in the north to take some of the pressure off of the airport at Kabul. I mean, the reality is the airport at Kabul is on two sides. You have hills and then there are mountains. And then on the other two sides, you have the city of Kabul. And it's from a security standpoint, it's not a good airport to secure. You have one section that was the military side, and then you had the civilian side. And there's one extremely long runway. That's it. I mean, it's not which amazes me, in 20 years, we didn't help them add another runway. But it's one runway, and by not providing perimeter security and not going out and getting our people, we've set up a scenario where the embassy, you know, sends out alerts saying, come at this time to the airport. And the last several days, they've done ones that just said, don't come to the airport for, you know, there's supposed to be another attack. Well, if they're telling you don't to come to the airport, they're not coming to get you to secure your passage to the airport, and the Taliban are doing checkpoints along the way to prevent people from going to the airport, but we are relying on the Taliban for security outside the airport. People aren't going to get out. How are you going to get out? It's just not. It's almost like it's a we're just going through the motion. Mm-hmm. And it's like a terrible play, a tragedy that's playing out right in front of our eyes. It's just, it's unbelievable. And, you know, they lob a couple of cruise missiles and say they got the people, but they won't release the names of the individuals that they killed that were supposed to be the ISIS-K members. To me, it's reminiscent of Bill Clinton lobbing cruise missiles and hitting aspirin factories in Sudan out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's too convenient that we supposedly took the people out right after the attack.
Yeah, and talk about this after the news break, too, because it's this question, if we could do that quickly after the attack, why couldn't we have seen the attack coming as well? Continue the conversation with Chip Brown, District 105 representative, also a vet and man that spent time in Afghanistan helping us understand the situation there. And we'll get you the latest from Saraland when it comes in as well. They have confirmed that tornado on the ground. We've seen pictures of the damage. Their plantation motel north of 158. Also, Chinatown and Chickasaw, damage there as well.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Reminder, the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app that gets you all kind of functionality. It's like a digital Swiss Army knife. Digital multi-tool out there. Traffic maps, up-to-date weather information, of course, the stream of the radio station, access to 55 hours a week of podcasts that we put up here at our studios. You grab that, you can get show schedules, you can get our social media feeds and get the information and news as it breaks through those as well. Just a little bit of what you can do with the FM Talk 106.5 app. It's free. It's waiting for you at the App Store for Apple users, for over there at the iTunes App Store, or Google Play for Android users. So check it out. Just search for FMTALK1065. Don't put a point between the 6 and 5. All right? And in addition, this segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my buddy Trey. He's been doing it for 13 years and maybe just kind of looking around, picking up in the yard after the wins we've had here and continue to have today. May give you some thought, give you some pause about the stuff that is laying around. Maybe it's outside your home. You know, I've said this before. If you got the swing set, you know, the Redwood swing set that has like the Pirates theme to it, you know, or the great playhouse for the girls or whatever. If you got and your youngest child's in their 30s, let it go. Call my buddy Trey. He does lots of those. He can handle big stuff like that. He can handle stuff inside your house or maybe a storage unit you're cleaning out, anything like that. You got junk, you need it gone. You need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Great experience. We used them here at the house. We use them at the station, and I've used them at my home. And it's easy to set that appointment. All you do is go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll find a day that works for you and a window of time works for you. And then they set an appointment and then they show up. It's a nice thing. And they quote you a price on the job. If you say, yeah, that works, then they get right to work and get it done then. Check them out. 1-800-GOT-JUNK on the telephone and 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com online. All right, continue our conversation with District 105 Representative Chip Brown, also a man that spent a lot of time in Afghanistan, has been a real source here as we talk about the situation there on, you know, what it really looks like on the ground and how to filter the information that's coming in out of through the administration or straight out of Afghanistan. Chip, when we went to break, talking about this question of, well, the macro to the micro to some degree and what we do afterwards, meaning like, okay, tomorrow is this deadline, 8/31, that, you know, the Taliban told us we couldn't move, which I'm really bothered that we couldn't tell them to stick it. But what do we have left there other than people that are potential hostages? Because we talked about the terrorist attack and then taking them out with the drone. I got to ask you this as a civilian, but you know I'm kind of interested in this stuff. What intel assets would we have left outside of the airport? Who's going to be feeding information to the U.S. military and CENTCOM?
Well, you know, you first of all, you mentioned the deadline. I mean, that goes against any type of strategic planning, no matter what it is. You don't set a deadline saying that we're going to get out by this date. I mean, it's idiotic. You get out when our people are out. And so we've set ourselves up by creating a deadline where there's just no way we'll get everybody out. And from an intelligence asset, I mean, we have some that would be on the ground, but the reality is, you know, a lot of people that would have helped us, that did help us, would not be helping us now because we're on the losing side of this. I mean, there's no way to spin this that we won in Afghanistan. I mean, you know, we could have. I mean, I think.
Well, I think we kept attacks away, right? I mean, I think that's a win. We, for 20 years, did not have an attack on the homeland.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're right about that, Sean. You're right about that. But from a military and strategic point, you can go back, in my opinion, it's 2009 when Obama hesitated to send in more troops for a surge that the generals were crying for like we did in Iraq. And he hesitated, showed weakness, and that was the point. But, you know, it's multiple times you could argue about that. But from a strategic standpoint of assets on the ground now, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what we would have. I mean, we're going to have some there. You can't be in the area for 20 years and not have some assets that would still be wanting to cooperate with you. But, you know, it's just, we from a regional perspective, from an international perspective, we are knocked down hard right now. I mean, this is, in my opinion, this is a worse beatdown than what we received in Vietnam, as far as from the perception standpoint of our standing in the world. And it's tragic. It didn't have to happen.
Well,
I mean,
okay, but I guess what I'm getting to is, you know, we've outsourced the security, and I'm air quoting here, around the airport to the Taliban, right? We had that story earlier also. The Taliban offered Kabul and control to the United States, seat everybody out. We didn't take it up. So they've taken control of that. So, I mean, it's begging the question to me then that if we're getting intel about, and I maybe you can help me, because I hear different stories about that Taliban and ISIS don't get along. And then other people say, well, no, they do get along. And so would it be, you know, if we're getting information from the Taliban, if that's our intel source, I don't know that it is, but I'm asking this question. If that's our intel source, couldn't they just be using our drones to deal with their mission, what they want done? They're like, yeah, here's the guy you want to get. Go hit this car. I mean, is the Taliban feeding us this info?
Yeah, well, I think it probably did come from the Taliban. You know, I mean, we're working, oddly enough, with the Taliban on these issues. I mean, just the ISIS and the Taliban, they're both in Islam. You have Shias, you have Sunnis, and Sunnis are the largest, and the Taliban and ISIS are both Sunni Muslim sects. And so from that standpoint, they're on the same page, but ISIS is a larger global network, whereas the Taliban is more of a regional operation based in Pakistan. And you have the Pakistani Taliban and you have the Afghan Taliban, but they take their orders from Pakistan. And the ISIS doesn't think that the Taliban is hardcore enough. They don't think that they are... they're strict enough from a religious standpoint of following the Quran, which is saying a lot, because the Taliban
they're killing women for being outside
brutal.
Without a burqa.
Yeah. And so from that standpoint, that's where the break comes, is there. You know, they're on the same side of hating us, but other than that, there's a big separation. I think, you know, they're united in hating us. I mean, I wouldn't trust either side to go against, you know, to get information from the Taliban about ISIS or get information from ISIS about the Taliban. I think that you're going to try to do their dirty work for them, but all at the same time, how reliable is that? I mean, and I think that kind of says where we are, that we're, you know, one, we're relying on the Taliban, but also we're... It's just too convenient to me that we did these missile strikes so quickly after the attack on the airport, and we knew exactly who they were. I mean, why, if we knew that who they were that quickly, then why weren't we able to stop them beforehand? And then it just, why aren't they releasing the names of who they were? I mean, that's, you know, his reports, he had 10 civilians killed yesterday in the missile attack yesterday. I mean, in Kabul, I don't know. I think so much of what we're doing over there is just so misguided by this administration that they let politics get in front of the mission, in front of doing the right thing, which is getting our people out and getting out the people that helped us in Afghanistan. I mean, we made promises to people that put their life on the line over there, that were interpreters and did intelligence work and you name it. And for 20 years, we told these people that we'd have their back. And now at the last hour, we're leaving them stranded along with American passport holders. And it's just a giant betrayal, in my opinion. It's tragic. We're signing the death sentence to those people.
And if people hadn't heard our earlier conversations over the last couple of weeks about this, this is not just a theoretical to you. You did everything to get somebody out. Won't go any further into detail because you can't, but somebody out that was important to you during your time in Afghanistan. I mean, you had to go to the mat for that.
Yeah, I did. I had a friend of mine that I'd worked with that in Afghanistan, and who is an American, but he's of Afghan descent and a passport holder, and he worked at worked over there for 6 years, working with to help build a free Afghanistan, and he was over there and was visiting his mother who was sick, and had been assured by the State Department that it was okay for him to go over there for the next 30 days, and then of course he got trapped in Kabul, and we tried to help with the airport, get him a flight out, and he was there when the fighting broke out inside the airport, and the individuals fell off of the C-17 flying out, and he saw them fall off the plane, and then had to turn around, and they basically had to go online to try to get out. He had to go online and fill out forms with the American embassy, and one of them was a voucher saying that he would agree to pay $2,000 back to the United States for extraditing him. I mean, for extracting them. I'm sorry. And they kept telling him not to come to the airport, to stay at home. And eventually, you know, I told him, look, you got to go. And he went one time, made it to the gate, and they turned him away. And even though he had a passport, they told him they couldn't open the gate because it'd be a rush of people. There were so many thousands of people. And turned around, went back home, and then told me he went back home. And I told him, look, you got to leave now. You got to get out. If you don't move right now, and within an hour of going back, this is early on, he had to go through four Taliban checkpoints to get to the military side of the airport. And they, you know, went through all of his belongings, everything. He hid his passport, hid his cell phone, and was able to get to the right gate and the right Marine, and they let him in and flew him to Qatar, and now he's back in the U.S. But his family is trapped over there, and they had to flee where they were living to another house that they owned because all the neighbors knew that they had worked with the United States, and that made them a target. And so they fled. They're destroying anything that they have that has Western writing on it that shows any kind of contact with him. They're deleting information in their cell phones, letters, paperwork. They're burying things in the yard. They're hiding things. I mean, it's they can't go outside. Women aren't allowed outside. They, you know, there's been people executed in their neighborhood that had cooperated with the United States that had worked for the coalition, and it's just it's a scary time. It's a bad time, and there's just no way without helping them get out that they're going to be able to get out. And once we leave, there's just no way to get them out.
All right, and again, I got so many questions. I realize we're going to run out of time because we can get in the munitions part, but I actually want to go to a part that I have not talked about. I don't think many people, not that it's not being reported, but because Wall Street Journal and others have stories on it. But explain to me, give me a sense of what you think about this, the Afghan resistance, right? The vice president's gone there. How do you pronounce it? Panjshir province up in the north. So what, a valley they could drive? I mean, do you think this is this is a little bighorn here for these folks, or do you think this is a place where they could expand some kind of battle? And do they have any of the munitions we left? And
well, you know, the interesting thing about Tangier is that it is a valley. It's a beautiful place. It's high on the hills, the high mountains. The Soviets tried several times to take it, and they were unsuccessful fighting against the Mujahideen, which were the Taliban freedom fighters that we helped provide weapons to, and they were unable to do it. And then during the war that followed, the Northern Alliance always held Panjshir, and the Taliban were unsuccessful in taking it as well. It's very difficult to invade because if you take the hills, then you can control the valley because you can rain fire down onto the valley. And that's where the Afghan resistance has gone to. And the former vice president of Afghanistan is there, and he's now the acting president of Free Afghanistan. And then you have several generals, you know, militia leaders that were from the old fighting the Taliban days were involved in that. And then heading it up, though, is Ahmad Massoud, who his father is a national hero in Afghanistan. And he was killed. His father was killed the night before the 9/11 attacks against the United States. He was assassinated. But he was the head of the Northern Alliance that fought the Taliban prior to the U.S. invasion. And he was a very good ally of the United States, and his son has taken up that banner, and he has military training. My understanding is that troops, former Afghan army troops, are streaming into Panjshir. You've had troops come down that had, you had two divisions that had crossed when the Taliban took control of Mazar Sharif and Bagram Air Base in the north. You had two divisions that were in the north of the Afghan army that fled to Uzbekistan, and they have come back, and they're in Panjshir, and they have their equipment, and so they have equipment. It's just the only thing that could, in my opinion, could damage their ability to fight is if they run out of supplies. You know, if they're, because Panjshir is, Afghanistan is landlocked, and Panjshir is deep inside of a landlocked country. It's north of Kabul, but, you know, they have equipment, they have men, they have thousands of fighters there, and they are prepared to do battle. I think, I mean, if Uzbekistan is saying they're going to supply them, Tajikistan, all of the countries to the north, I would think that you will see India work with them too, because it's beneficial
to fight against Pakistan. Indians. Yeah, it's like a proxy war against Pakistan, isn't it?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, because if the Taliban takes control of Afghanistan, then that's a direct threat, really, to Kashmir. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see the Indians, I think, supply them. And you know, another one too is Saudi Arabia. It's beneficial to the Saudi Arabian government to have someone fighting against Muslim extremists, because if you actually develop a full-scale war there, then you'll have Muslim extremists flow into the country. So I don't know. I think they're going to put up a good fight. I really do. I hope so.
Well, that may be, you know, that may, there's so many unknowns here, but that may be the, you know, maybe the genesis for something different. I don't know. I don't know how, you know, we left all the, I mean, I sure wish all the Blackhawks and Humvees and, you know, 117s and all that were sitting in the Panjshir Valley, right, with those folks, not being controlled by the Taliban.
Well, and at least, Sean, you know, when we left and we realized that the Afghan government, the Afghan military couldn't hold these, you know, weapons and equipment that we had left, why wouldn't we take out the airfields in Kandahar and Jalalabad and Bagram and just carpet bomb them and destroy all that equipment as we left? I mean, that makes no sense to me. Why leave things that once the Afghan army had fallen, why not go ahead and, you know, take out those facilities? But, you know, I think we're in, from a military perspective, I think we're in a very weak spot right now. Our political will in the White House is probably weaker than it was even during the Jimmy Carter day. And that in a situation like this, how much aid are they really going to provide to the Northern Alliance that in Panjshir that's going to fight against the Taliban? I think we won't, my opinion, I don't believe we'll get involved. I mean, yeah. We're already working and negotiating with the Taliban and talking about providing aid to the Taliban, you know?
Makes me ill. It makes me ill for sure. Let's do this. We're going to have to, after tomorrow being the horrible day of the 31st, we'll have to regroup and look at it then. Maybe you can join us later on in the week to get some more updates from Afghanistan.
Sure. I'd love to, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right. District 105 Representative Chip Brown. At some point, we'll be able to get conversation about Montgomery, too, with him, but has such a wealth of knowledge about Afghanistan that he is kind enough to share with us right now. Puts things into perspective. Whether I like that or not, at least I know the truth, right? All right, coming right back to wrap it up.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, about to wrap it up here on a Monday. Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. Get more information through our social media platforms as well. And then, of course, with Dan and Dalton tomorrow watching this tornado. We have confirmed damage, like we talked about, Saraland. Also, up into Clark County as well. Frio area. We're keeping our eyes on this story for you as we continue to have those the training effect from what was Hurricane Ida as it's making its way. So we've still got the rain, the flash flooding effects, and the chance of tornadoes going forward. It's not over yet. Still could be tornadoes in the mix. So be vigilant out there, and we'll get you the latest info right here at FM Talk 106.5. Big thank you to Congressman Jerry Carl. Big thank you to Chip Brown, and big thank you to y'all. Be right back and do this all again tomorrow on a Tuesday here at FM Talk 106.5.